Imagine surviving the end of the world, only to discover that was just the beginning. In James Dashner's The Kill Order, we're thrust into a landscape already devastated by catastrophic solar flares that scorched Earth, melted ice caps, and drowned coastal cities. 13 years before the events of The Maze Runner, Mark and Trina have somehow carved out a fragile existence in the Appalachian Mountains alongside their makeshift family, gruff ex-soldier Alec, nurse Lana, joking teenager Darnell, redheaded Misty, and the muscular but short man everyone calls the Toad. Despite living in crude shelters under a perpetually burnt orange sky, they found moments of normalcy, even laughter. Then one morning, as Mark watches Trina reading by a stream and declares it will be a perfect day, the sky fills with the roar of engines, a sound not heard since civilization collapsed. Throughout their desperate journey, Mark experiences vivid flashbacks to the day the sun flares hit Earth, memories he desperately tries to suppress. He and Trina were riding a subtrance beneath New York City when the catastrophe struck. The power failed, plunging them into darkness. Emergency lights activated as panicked passengers fled. Rather than follow the crowd, they walked in the opposite direction, eventually reaching a substation where they encountered a horrific scene. Burned bodies, screaming victims with melted faces, and overwhelming heat. As tsunamis caused by the melting polar ice caps flooded Manhattan, Mark, Trina, and others fought to survive in the rapidly flooding tunnels. A massive wall of water pursued them until they were saved by Alec, who helped them navigate to safety in the Lincoln Building. They spent weeks there, surviving on vending machine food, surrounded by the stench of rotting bodies, before eventually escaping the flooded city on a commandeered yacht. These memories serve as a stark reminder. The sun flares were a natural disaster, but what they face now is something far more sinister, a man-made plague deliberately unleashed. An unmarked Berg airship attacks their settlement, firing dart weapons that cause people to collapse. Mark, Trina, and friends flee, with Mark and Alec attaching themselves to the departing Berg using grappling hooks to investigate. Inside, they discover sealed boxes labeled Virus VC32XB47, highly contagious, evidence of deliberate biological warfare. Returning days later, they find about 20 bodies with blood-covered faces. Darnell, who initially survived, dies horrifically, shivering, moaning about his head, with blood seeping from his eyes, ears, and mouth. The virus works rapidly, showing symptoms within hours and killing within 12, while survivors face mental deterioration that turns them violent and irrational. Their investigation leads to an underground facility where they uncover the truth. The virus is a weapon created by the Post-Flares Coalition's Population Control Committee. The PFC determined that post-flare resource scarcity made current population levels unsustainable, choosing selective extinction as their solution. Recovered documents expose Chancellor John Michael and Katie McVoy's correspondence discussing acceptable losses and population optimization targets. They chose a neural targeting virus for its painless shutdown of brain function, a perverse attempt at humanitarian mass murder. Executive Order #13 authorized virus release with armed forces positioned to ensure orderly implementation, not civilian protection. Throughout history, utilitarian calculations have justified atrocities in the name of the greater good. The PFC embodied this dark philosophy, believing sacrificing millions would ensure humanity's survival. Their hypocrisy was revealed with the discovery of Asheville, a fortified compound housing flat trans technology, allowing PFC leadership to escape to Alaska, abandoning the chaos they created. The virus, now called the flare, initially resembles severe flu with splitting headaches, high fever, and extreme fatigue. Within 48 hours, victims bleed from eyes, ears, nose, and mouth. While death claims about 40% of infected within a week, survivors face worse. the virus methodically destroys neural pathways, causing irreversible descent into madness. The infected progress through distinct stages of deterioration. Early phases bring mood swings, paranoia, and aggression, with some victims forming cult-like groups following figures like Jedediah, who preaches that sun flares were divine punishment. As the disease advances, some turn feral, hunting in packs, while others develop elaborate delusions. Mark's own infection brings uncontrollable rage, hallucinations of dancing lights, and disturbing pleasure when causing pain. He treasures his increasingly rare moments of lucidity. As the virus claims Mark, Alec, and Trina, their mission shifts from survival to a race against their failing minds. Alec, Mark's hardened veteran father figure, acknowledges the virus but refuses to die without purpose. "Not for nothing," he repeatedly states, insisting on piloting the Berg to Asheville to save Dee Dee despite his weakening condition. Amidst the horror emerges a single ray of hope, a little girl named Dee Dee. Mark's group finds her abandoned and terrified, with a circular dart wound on her arm. Evidence she was exposed to the virus yet didn't succumb. Her community had cast her out, believing she was evil for neither dying nor descending into madness like others infected. Dee Dee's immunity becomes a crucial bridge to the Maze Runner series, as immune individuals will eventually form the foundation of humanity's search for a cure. She represents both biological hope and the persistence of innocence in a world consumed by madness. Her genuine laugh reminds them of what humanity once was and could be again. The mission to protect Dee Dee and transport her to someone who might harness her immunity drives the narrative's final act. As Mark, Alec, and Trina begin showing symptoms, they race against time with desperate determination to ensure her survival, giving their sacrifice. In these intense moments, Mark's mind drifts to a memory with Trina in a mountain cave after the sun flares. Her body against his chest, rain creating peaceful sounds outside, their whispered conversations about tomorrow. This tender memory contrasts with their present reality, both infected, minds slowly fracturing, yet their connection enduring. Even as they struggle to remember themselves, their protective instinct for each other remains. The epilogue, 2 years later, shows a mother saying goodbye to her young son as three figures in protective gear arrive. The leader speaks of the boy's sacrifice for developing a cure. Someone suggests naming him Thomas, after Thomas Edison, creating a direct link to the future Maze Trials protagonist. We learn Dee Dee is actually Teresa from the original trilogy. The immune child Mark and his friends saved becomes crucial to finding a cure, though in ways they never imagined. In a world devastated by both nature and human calculation, the Kill Order questions what defines our humanity when it's being stripped away. Is it our capacity for sacrifice, our ability to love despite mental deterioration, or our stubborn hope in hopeless situations? Mark, Trina, and Alec's final act, ensuring Dee Dee's survival as they lose themselves, suggests humanity's essence lies in what we sacrifice for others. Their actions create a thread of hope extending into the Maze Runner series. In a world where both nature and human institutions have turned hostile, perhaps our greatest strength is fighting not just for our own survival, but for a future we may never witness.